So we're beginning to learn Masechta Chagiga. Nominally, Masechta Chagiga talks about the mitzvahs of Aliyah L'Regel by the Shalosh Shagolim and of bringing the Korbanos then, the Oil Sriya and the Shamash Chagiga. Practically speaking, probably even more than most of the Masechtas that we've been doing thus far, Chagiga is Chagiga. We're starting to learn Masechta Chagiga. Officially, it talks about the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel and the Karbonis that you bring them over the 3 years, the Shalosh Chagiga. Practically speaking, it's kind of a miscellany. We're going to have, say, the Gemara always digresses on things we know, but here even the Mishnayos digress quite a bit. We're going to have some interesting stuff, in the second Perek, a Mishnah, and then a whole long Gemara about Ma'aseh Merkava and Ma'aseh Bereishis. That whole famous Gemara. We're going to talk about a little bit about Jewish history here and there. And the last eight or nine blocks of the Masechta talk about Tumah V'Tahara. There's going to be a little bit of everything.
As long as we don't talk about Abba.
we're done with Avelos. Well, there will be a brief thing about it in a few days, but yeah. The other thing to know about Chagiga is, even though it's a very short Masechta, it'll be one of the shortest we've done so far, it has in it a lot of basic sugyas, a lot of very basic sugyas to lumdus, which are fundamentals, a fundamental concept. We're going to have, for example, things about the definition of a cheresh and a shoita, the chiyuv of a cotton, what kind of chiyuv does he have in mitzvahs, do his parents have to give him chinuch. As I said, we're going to have Tumah V'Tahara. There's going to be a lot of basic ideas, a lot of very fundamental concepts in halacha that come out of this Masechta. Mishnah says, Hakol chayavin b'ri'iyah, everybody is obligated in the mitzvah of ri'iyah, which Rashi says, and now the word ri'iyah can have two meanings. Ri'iyah means seeing or being seen, as we'll see in the Gemara. So that's how Rashi explains it. It means there's a mitzvah yeroh called zechucha. Everybody has to appear and be seen by Hashem in the Beis Mikdash, as we'll learn in the Gemara also, to see the Shechina, kav yachol. So that's what we mean. Hakol chayavin b'ri'iyah. Everybody's obligated to appear in the Beis Mikdash. Tosfos says no. Tosfos has a long discussion about it that says no. The word ri'iyah we're going to have at the end of the Mishnah, the word ri'iyah, we're going to have machlokes the Shama Beis Hillel, where the word ri'iyah means the carbon that you bring for the olas ri'iyah, the carbon that you bring in honor of your coming. So Tosfos argues that's what the Mishnah is talking about. When we say kol chayavin b'ri'iyah, we're talking about that you're obligated to bring this carbon, not just to make an appearance there.
When you bring the carbon, that also includes
Well, that's true, because you don't just send the carbon, you come yourself. Yeah, Tosfos says, I mean, even Rashi, of course, agrees that for the most part, people who are chayiv to come to the Beis Mikdash have to bring the carbon as well, because v'lo yiro upon arekam, you're not allowed to come to the Beis Mikdash empty-handed. Rashi is just mentioning one thing out of the two aspects of Riyah. Except for a deaf person, which we'll learn in the Gemara actually means, we'll discuss whether that means, as it usually does throughout Shas, a deaf mute, somebody who congenitally can't hear from birth and therefore never learned to speak, or are we talking even about somebody who is only deaf, who became deaf later in life and therefore is able to speak? Shoita, which we'll have a definition of that tomorrow. The cotton, a child, the tumtum, the androgynous, those are the two famous characters throughout Shas. The tumtum is somebody who has ambiguous genitalia, so there's a covering there, so you can't tell if he's male or female. And an androgynous is somebody who has both sets, both male and female organs. The noshim and women. All these things we'll learn individually in the Gemara how come each of them is potter. The avodim and slaves, avodim knanim, that is. And slaves who are not freed. No, because an Eved Meshuchra, when an Eved Kanani is freed, he becomes just like every other Jew. Well, he becomes like a ger, actually, and of course gave him a chayiv in Re'iyah, so an Eved Meshuchro would also be. That's the point of mentioning Avodim She'enim Meshuchrorim. They're not free, they're Avodim Knanim, so they have, for the most part, the same mitzvahs as women. If women are potter, then Avodim are potter as well. No, but we still call him the same way as you say, you know, the same way. As, yeah, I mean, you, an Eved, he was an Eved, now he's Meshuchro, okay.
And we'll also go over that later on.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. Hachiger, a person who's lame, Vasuma, or blind, Vachoyla, or sick, Vazaken, an old person, or Mishen Yochalalas Beraglav, and somebody who's not able to come up on foot from Yerushalayim to the Beit HaMikdash. Ezo Katan, the Mishnah asks, okay, most of them it's fairly obvious, but what's the definition of a Katan for this purpose? Now, if we're talking about the Chiyuv of the child himself, he doesn't have a chiyuv until he's by mitzvah. But if we're saying a katan is potter, we mean more than just the Rashi points out below. There comes a certain point. He may not be chayiv min atarah, but midrabanan, his parents are chayiv mechanechim in mitzvahs, including to be oil regal. What's the age? We learned in Sukkah, for example, and in a few other places that there's different ages of chinuch for different mitzvahs, depending on what kind of mitzvah it is and the child's capabilities. For Sukkah, for example, we learned it's when the child doesn't need his mother anymore, 5-6 years old. For tefillin, technically, it's when he's old enough to know how to keep his body clean while wearing them. For learning Torah, is when he's old enough to start saying Shema Yisrael and Torah Tziva, etc. So what's the age of chinuch for this? Incidentally, Rashi says over here that the Chachamim puts this obligation al aviv val ima, on his father and on his mother, which gets into the Mepharshim get into a whole discussion of that. Where do we ever find that the mother has a chiyuv of chinuch on her children? Really, the chiyuv of chinuch is on the father, especially here if the women themselves are potter. So there are some Mepharshim who say that, yeah, Rashi just means that the father has the primary chiyuv, but the mother like has a secondary thing of it, or if the father is not available, then the mother defaults him. Anyway, so Ezel Katan, Kol She'en Yochel Lurker Vakseif of Shalaviv, any child who's too young, they're learning also.
Excuse me.
Avram Moshe, they're learning too.
They're learning too,
relax. Kol She'en Yochel Lurker Vakseif of Shalaviv, anybody who can't, any child who's too young to go to ride on his father's shoulders, Velalos Mishalayim Laharabayis, to go up from Yerushalayim to the Harabayis, Divir Bet Shammai. That's what Mr. Shammai says. It doesn't matter even if he can't walk on his own, as long as he's able to as long as his father is able to carry him on his shoulders, then that's already enough for the to be mechayev him. Or no, kol she'ani yochel lecha is biyad shalaviv. Any child who's too young to be able to hold his father's hand, v'lalus mirshalayim harabayis, and to go up from Yerushalayim to the harabayis. So he has to be old enough to actually be able to walk, at least holding his father's hand. Shenema shal shergolim, because the pasuk actually says that you have to come up on foot three pilgrimage, young and when you actually have to make a pilgrimage on foot.
So it's
a much older age.
Hold your father's hand.
As opposed to being carried on his shoulders. Think of it. You know, you could carry a 2-year-old on your shoulders, let's say, all the way from your Yerushalayim up to the Harabayis, even though he wouldn't be able to walk that distance, even holding your hand.
But you can also hold the hand of a 2-year-old or 1-year-old.
Sure, you can, but they can't walk very much. They're gonna get tired very soon. Which are, we're not talking about just to walk a few steps from your Yerushalayim to the Harabayis. It's going up a considerable number of steps too, because the Harabayis was higher than the city of Yerushalayim. Incidentally, Tosfos Yom Tov asks, why are we saying only to the Har Bayis? I mean, the mitzvah is not just to come to the Har Bayis, you actually have to come into the Azara. So he says, okay, once you're able to get up to the Har Bayis, then okay, it's a few steps more to get up to the Azara, big deal, you know, if you're able to make it to the Har Bayis, you're able to make it that extra distance. The Meshech Chochma gives an interesting answer, which is that actually the Rambam explains, the Gemara discusses in Shavuos, which means that we'll be getting to it another year in some Bezos Hashem, but Shavuot is in Ezekiel, never mind, we're going to be getting to it in a couple of years, but anyway. The Gemara discusses over there the possibility that the Sanhedrin, and along with the king and a Navi, can decide to enlarge the area of the Azara. And the Rambam describes in Hilchos Beis HaBechira all the details. They can decide that the area of the Azara should be enlarged, and the whole ceremony that they do to make it official, that now this extra area has the Kedusha of the Azara. How far can they extend the Azara? The Rambam says, only until the edge of the Harabayis. They can't extend the Harabayis any because it's built on the topography of the mountain. And the Azara is limited by that also. So therefore, we say over here Harabayis in the sense like that's the maximum the Azara could ever be. Continues the Mishnah. Beis Shammai Omrim Hori Yishtei Kesef Bachagiga Mar Kesef. Beis Shammai says that again we have two korbanos you're supposed to be bringing each Yom Tov when you come to the Beis Hamikdash. You have an Ola in honor of the fact that you're seeing and being seen by Hashem. It's called an Ola Sriya. And then you have a korban Shlomo, which is called a korban Chagiga. Really, actually, there's two different chiyuvim of chagiga. There's one that you have to bring a chagiga in honor, that you bring a shami chagiga, and then there's also something called shami simcha. We learned about it in Pesachim, where you have to. There's a third one for Pesach as well. That's a whole other matter. We learned about it then. But you have shami simcha, which is the mitzvah to eat meat on Yom Tov. It's machta b'chagecha, ein simcha ela b'bachah. So that's the thing, actually. There's three different chiyuvim, really. There's three different chiyuvim, but you can. We'll learn more about it mostly in the second parak. But you can bring your chagiga on the first day Yom Tov, and then you're accomplishing both things. You're accomplishing the chagiga for the Yom Tov as well as the mitzvah of simcha because you're eating the meat of it. As opposed to if you were to bring the shlomim the day before erev Yom Tov, you yotze simcha because you have 2 days to eat it, so you can still be eating it the first night and the first day of Yom Tov. But you haven't been yotze the mitzvah chagiga of Yom Tov because you didn't bring it on Yom Tov. Re'iyah, then you have to bring the korban oila, that's what we're saying. So now, the machlokas v'shama v'sila is, what's the minimum value of these korbanos? Now, I mean, we say every day in davening, elu dvorim shein lam shir, a payer of atikorim, v'ara oyen. Ra'oyin means this mitzvah of appearing in the mitzvah and bringing the korban. Minat Torah, there is no shear for it. In other words, minat Torah, you can bring an animal, no matter how little it's worth, for an ola, and you, as long as there's a mum, obviously, and you yotze. Midrabbanan, that and many of the other things we say, a lot of things we say in that Mishnah actually, that Eilu Dvorim Shein Lam Shir, a lot of them have shear in midrabbanan. Peah, for example, is supposed to be at least 1/60th. Bikurim, there's also supposed to be 1/60th. So Ra'oyin, there's a minimum. A 60th of the crop.
Your crop was the person who brings it.
Yeah. So what's the minimum amount of the Re'iya, Midrabbanan? So Beis Shammai, Re'iya Shtei Kesef, Bachagiga Mar Kesef. So Beis Shammai says, the carbon Re'iya, the oil of Re'iya, which is brought completely as an oil and completely offered to Hashem, has to be worth at least 2 silver coins, 2 dinar. Or actually not 2 dinar, sorry, 2 mar. The 6 mar to a dinner, so 1/3 of a dinner. V'chagiga mar kesef, and the chagiga can be worth half that. It can be worth a mar, because the chagiga they hold is less important, because it's a shlomim. Not all of it goes on the mezbeach, only parts of it. Batzilla says, no, the other way around. Ha'ri'iyah mar kesef, the carbon, the olas ri'iyah has to be worth at least a mar. V'chagiga shtei kesef, and the chagiga has to be worth at least 2. Because the chagiga, in a way, is more important because you're eating it. We'll learn in Nandachvav, we'll learn the underlying machlokas between them. The Rebbe points out in a few places in the Kutasichas that we find a lot of times we can generalize about the machlokas b'shama b'tillo, that b'shama tends to look at the generality of things and b'tillo tends to look more at the specifics. So this is one of those examples. B'shama looks at the general thing, the Olas Re'iyah is more important, it goes completely to Hashem. And therefore, they hold it should be worth more. Whereas Basil looks at the details. The fact is, the carbon is going to be eaten, some of it by the Mizbeach, some of it by the Kohenim, and some of it by the owner, and therefore it has to be worth more.
One is 2 silver coins.
And the other one is 1. So they both agree, 2 and 1, the Machlokas is which one is which.
I also see that there's the Hesed, which is gift sharing and all that more, and there's Gevurah, which is dedicated all to God and all that.
Fair enough, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Hakol l'asur yamai, what does the word Hakol at the beginning of the Mishnah come to include? If the Mishnah just wanted to tell us that these various people, Cheresh, Shotev, Akaten, etc., are potter, then it would start out saying that Cheresh, Shotev, Akaten, etc., are potter from Re'iyah. L'asur yamai, shechetzi eved v'chetzi ben chorin, comes to include somebody who is half slave and half free. The classic case, how you could have that, is you have a slave who is owned by 2 owners, one of them frees him, but now the other half of him is still a slave. The other way that Rishonim talk about is you could have a slave, usually Mashakana Abed Kanaraba, usually whatever a slave owns belongs to his master. But you can have, there's certain ways in which legally a slave, an Abed Kanani, is able to acquire money and property and whatever of his own, mainly if he gets the Mamanas that his master shouldn't have any part in them. So therefore it's possible for him to end up having enough money to be able to buy half of his freedom, to pay for half of his own value. And the other half still plays. So therefore, what we're saying is that even a chetzi eved b'chetzi ben chorin is chayev in ri'ya. Question is, what do you mean? Well, Ravina do amam mishachetzi eved b'chetzi ben chorin potter min ri'ya. What about according to Ravina? The Gemara is going to discuss on Daf Dalet that he says that in fact a person like that is potter from ri'ya. Well, then hakol l'asur yamai. We're back to the question. According to him, what would hakol come to include? The answer is l'asur yichiga b'yamirshim nespashet b'yamsheni. It would come to include somebody who was lame, blind, or what have you, on the first day, and then was healed on the second day. So he wasn't chayev and aliyah l'regel the first day because he couldn't walk, but the second day now he is.
Second day of
Yom Tov, yeah, or any of the other days of Yom Tov, yeah.
So
no. But you have the chiyuv of aliyah l'regel applies throughout the whole 7 days of Yom Tov. So therefore, it doesn't matter if it's one day of Yom Tov, but there's 6 days of Chol HaMoed. If he's healed on the first day of Chol HaMoed, it seems that's what we're saying. Now the Mishnah seems to be implying that he would have to come up on the other day, even though yesterday he was positive. Then the question becomes: Hanuchal Amando Amakol Tashlum and Zelazet. This is good according to the opinion, which also we're going to have later on, that all of the days of Yom Tov are considered Tashlumin for each other. We're saying the next Mishnah in the Perek is going to say that, which we've learned several times already, that if you didn't bring your Karbanos the first day Yom Tov, you can bring them the second, the third, etc., throughout the whole 7 days. And in the case of Sukkot, you even have the eighth day. And in the case of Shavuos, you have the 6 weekdays following Shavuos. The question is, how do we look at that? Do we look at it that you have a Chiyuv on the first day, and if you didn't bring it on the first day, you have a Chiyuv, a separate Chiyuv, a new Chiyuv on the second day? And if you bring them on the second day, you have a new chiyuv on the third day, etc. That's called kolon tashlum and zelazet. That each one makes up for the previous one. You bring it the previous day, you have a new chiyuv. You have a new chiyuv to do it today.
Not accumulate.
But the point is that each day is considered a separate chiyuv of its own. As opposed to, you say, kolam tashlumin derishon, which means if you didn't bring it the first day, then you have the second or third or fourth or fifth, etc., to bring it. But that means, in other words, the practical difference would be if you weren't chayev on the first day, do you become chayev on the second day? If you say kolam tashlumin zelazeh, then you say yes. Since the second day has its own independent chiyuv, if you didn't bring it on the first day, and the third day has its own independent chiyuv if you didn't bring on the second, then yes, if you're now able to bring it on the third, which you weren't on the second, then yes, you're chayiv now on the third. As opposed to if we say kol tashlum and derishon, that all of them are an extension of the first day, then no, you weren't chayiv on the first day, that's it, you're not chayiv throughout that entire Yom Tov. So this works out nicely according to the opinion that all of them are tashlumin for each other, that each day has a new chiyuv. But according to the opinion that all of them are tashlumin, are makeup days for the first day, which means that if you weren't chayev the first day, you're not chayev any of the other days, then you're back to hakol after you might. Then what do you bet? What does the word hakol come to include? Because according to that, yes, if you were lame on the first day and were healed on the second or third or what have you, you would not be chayev because you were potter on the first day. So the answer is l'asuya suma ba'achas me'enov. In that case, then we use it to include the case of somebody who is blind in one eye, and then that would be a deloiki haitan. Now the Mishnah says that if you're blind, you're potter, but that means blind in two eyes according to this. Or deloiki haitan. And in that case, our Mishnah would not be according to the following Tana, the Tanya Yochanan ben Dehavoy Yomim Mishum Rabbi Yehuda. He says that somebody who's blind in one eye is potter from Riyah, because the pasuk says Yira Yera. Rashi and Tosfos argue which order you're supposed to read the words in, Yira Yera or Yera Yera. This is one of those we have the concept before. The Gemara discusses in a few places that you have you can understand the words in a pasuk according to the way they're written or according to the way they're read. Called respectively, Yeshem Lemikra or Yeshem Lemasiris. Yeshem Lemikra would mean that we look at we don't have Nekudas written in the Sefer Torah, and therefore words can be read using any of many different sets of Nekudas. So therefore you go according to, so to speak, like what's the more obvious Nekud that you would put on this word. We have this in Sukkah, for example, that we say with Sukkah, the word Sukkah is spelled Chaser in a few places, so it can be read as if it said Sukkah. We have this concept a few times already. So here, if you have in front of you the letters Yud, Resh, Aleph, Hey, one obvious way of reading it is Yireh Kol Zechorcha. All of you should see. But we don't. That's called Yeshem and Mikra. How do we actually read it in the Torah? Yireh. which means he will be seen. Either way, the point is we're darshaning both of those things. Kederach shabal liris, kach bal lirois. Just like the person comes to see the Shechina, kach bal lirois, so he comes to be seen. And therefore, mal lirois b'shteinov, af lirois b'shteinov. Just as he has to be able to see with both eyes, so is he seen with both eyes. Meaning, the Eibishter obviously is not blind in one eye, chas v'shalom. When he sees us, he looks at us with both eyes. So the person has to be able to see the Eibishter also with two eyes, and therefore if he's blind in one eye, according to that opinion, according to Yerichon ben Nahavai, he would in fact be chatur. When our Mishnah says Akol Chayovin Beriyah and implies that we're saying the implication is that someone who's blind in one eye is chayav, that disagrees with that. I was looking up before, and that's thanks for sending me that text. I guess you probably got it from Yosef Keller. On the one hand, you know, we're talking about the Eibishter sees us with both eyes, and we have Pesukim that say so. Hine Hashem El Tadikin. On the other hand, don't we have Pesukim which speak of Hashem looking at us with one eye? Ein Hashem El Yireyov. So there's a medrash at the end of Shir Hashirim Naba that says that the difference is when Yisrael Oysen Ratzonu Shalmakim, then Eibishter looks at us with both eyes, and when Ein Oysen Ratzonu Shalmakim, when we're not quite where we should be, then it's Ein Hashem, then it's one eye. And in Chassidus, in the Kodesh Torah, in Parshas Re'eh, and in a number of other places, it expands on the idea that you have the two major ways that we relate to the Eibishter. When Oysen Ratzonu Shalmakim, then we have both of them. There's a give and take. And when not, then we only have the one. So here we're saying Kederach Shabal Liris, Kach Bal Lirois. Obviously, we're talking about you want to have both aspects of that, both the Tzurusa Del Eila and the Tzurusa Del Sata. Or yeah. I saw also a Chassidish Shavart that's quoted in the name of Rabbi Lemelech. It's also quoted from the Kozhnitzer that they say. A person has to be able to look at how they are relative to the Eibishter with two eyes. On the one hand, with one eye you look at the greatness of the Eibishter, and with the other eye you look at how low you yourself are. Now, what happens? The person is sumabachas me'enav. He's missing the ability to look at himself and realize where he really stands. All he sees is the greatness of the Eibishter. That's not such a good thing, because then that makes him become a Baal Gaiva. Look how great I am that I'm able to have a relationship with Hashem. So we say, Summa ba'achas me'enav is potter min ra'iyah. He's exempt from seeing, meaning that he'd do better off not seeing either of these things rather than just seeing the one and becoming a Baal Gaiva. The Ibai Seima, or the Gemara says, La'olam kida amri mi'ikara. We could actually say, like we said originally, that in fact, the Hakol Chayovin Beriyah does include the Chetzi Eved v'Chetzi Ben Chorin, the half-free, half-slave. Or the Chakash al-Achad Ravina, what do we do with what Ravina said? And Ravina is an Amori, he can't argue with a Mishnah. The answer is, like Kasha, Kan Kamishna Rishona, Kan Kamishna Achrona. One is talking according to the original Mishnah, and one is talking according to the later Mishnah. Namely, Ditnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Gittin, Misha Chetzi Eved v'Chetzi Ben Chorin, over this rabbi yemechad v'es atma yemechad. This half Eved, half slave. On the one hand, the master has the right to his work because he's an Eved. On the other hand, not because he's a Ben Chorin. So what do? He serves his master for one day and himself, and he works for himself for one day. So he alternates back and forth. One day working for his master, one day for himself, earning money for himself, and back and forth.
Or he could have two masters, one day each of them has.
So if he had two masters, that's how it was to begin with, before one of them freed him. He was working for Reuven on Sunday and Shimon on Monday. Here he's half free, so he works for himself on Monday. Yeah, okay. That's what Beis Hillel says. However, Amr Lahem Beis Shammai, very nice. Tikantem es Rabbi, you fixed up things for his Rebbe. His Rebbe, is going to get as much work out of him as he's supposed to. Very nice. Es ves atzmo le tikantem. But you haven't fixed himself up. You haven't done something that's going to make things work out properly for the Eved. Why? Lisa Shifcha in a Yachol, Bachurin in a Yachol. He can't marry a slave woman because he's half free, and a Jewish man, including a Ger, is not allowed to marry a slave woman. He can't marry a Bachurin, he can't marry a free woman because half of him is a slave. And we read last week's parasha lo yikodesh mibnei Yisrael. Rashi mentioned that Targum explained one meaning of this mitzvah is that an eved Kanani is not allowed to marry a bat Yisrael. We see Kadesh actually is what it was, whatever. But so he can't get married.
That's not an Eved
Meshuchar. If he was completely Eved Meshuchar, sure, he could marry anybody except for a Bas Koyen. Maybe he could even marry a Bas Koyen. Lojzer Trails and also Absurdum. Whatever. The point is, he has a wide variety. And if he was a complete Eved, he could marry a Shivcha. He's half and half, so he's stuck in between. So there's several Tosfos over here that go through many different possibilities. Why don't we say that he might be able to Taka to marry a half free, half slave woman herself, and then his slave half is with her slave half, and vice versa. The answer is he can't. You can't really split either. You can't really split either of them in half. Because effectively, what you have is then the free side of him also is having relations with the slave half of her, and vice versa. Tosfos discusses the comparison of that to Kalayim. It's a different kind of thing. What about can he? Tosfos is pointing out that there's a difference between that and Kalayim. With Kalayim, for example, you're allowed Kalay Behema. If you have a mule, and there's two different kinds of mules, one where the father is a horse and one where the mother is a horse, you're allowed to mate a mule with a similar mule that has the same parentage, that has mule by definition is half and half, but you can take a male mule whose father was a horse and mate it with a female mule whose father was also a horse. Here we're saying not, and Tosfos discusses the reason for the difference.
Also, this is different he's not going to be obligated in mitzvah, because that's when you're fully free that you're obligated in mitzvah.
Maybe you could argue that on the day that he's not working for his master, then he's chayiv in mitzvahs, and on the day when he is, then he's potter from mitzvahs. You could argue that. There are a couple of interesting choshens on Choshen Mishpat, where he has a lot of discussion lahalacha. What exactly would be the status of this guy? Is it actually one point he discusses is the question: do we say that effectively he goes back and forth from being free to slave, or do we say that he's always a slave, and just, you know, there's a practical matter, he's not working for his master, but because on the face of it, he says you can't say he's going back and forth, because once he's free, how can he become a slave again? So according to that, he would be possible from mitzvahs that entire time. So that's why Vishama is not making that objection. So Tosfos also asks, why can't he marry a mamzeret, either both a freed slave and a slave who's still a slave are allowed to marry a mamzeret. Tosfos says, okay, but we don't want more mamzerim in the world, first of all, and second of all, in a way, the guy is like two different people in one body. Because he's half free, half slave, you effectively have, you know, she's an ashes ish to one and not to the other, so to speak. Anyway, so he can't get married. Now the question is, Livtil, should you say then that he should be that he shouldn't do anything? He should remain unmarried? Can't. The world was only created for Piri Viribya. Shenema Loy Toyubra Lashavis Yitzara. The Pasuk says Hashem didn't create the world for nothingness, for void, for emptiness. He created it. He made it to be inhabited. The reason why we're mentioning that pasuk, Tosfos says, is a couple of Tosfos discusses a few different reasons, but one of them is because an eved, the mitzvah pru avu, is a mitzvah that's binding on Jewish men. It's not binding on avonim. So fine, you would say, or women for that matter. Yeah, women aren't chayv in pru avu either, as we'll learn in Yeramas. Yeah. So if it was just that, you could say, okay, very nice pru avu, but he's not chayv in it. Lo Torah bro, the Shabbat Yitzhara is addressed to the entire world. Actually, the truth is the shul. Yeah, apparently including avonim. Actually, the Shultz discusses the possibility that maybe the mitzvah of Pruvu applies to Goyim as well, but okay, anyway. The Shultz is one of the early Goyim, Rabbi Choy Goyim. Anyway, Ella, so what do we do? M'pnei tikkun ha'olam, for the sake of the proper functioning of the world, kofin es rabbi, we force his master to free him completely, the one who only owns half of him now, to free him completely. Both sides have been chorin, they make him completely free, because, and then now he can get married. Because of l'shtara ha'tidamav, and the eved, what about now he owes half of his worth to the master? Okay, he writes out an IOU that I owe you half the money. All right, now. So eventually, so Basilul accepted Bishamai's position and changed their mind and accepted Bishamai's position that indeed you don't let the guy remain a chetev and chetev and chorin indefinitely. You force the master to free him as soon as possible. Yeah. So now, how does this relate to our Mishnah? So Rashi says like so. So Rashi and the Raizad learn like this. The first part of the Mishnah, when it said Akol Chayavim Beriya, is talking about according to the Mishnah Achroyim. Once both Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel agreed that a Chetzeved and a Chetzeved and Chorin has to be released from that situation as soon as possible, effectively, even though he's still half Eved now, we consider him in a way as if he's completely free. Because he pretty soon will be, according to the Takana. Therefore, the Mishnah starts out Akol Chayavim Beriya, that he's obligated in Aliyah L'Regel. That makes him force him. Koifin means force him, yeah. Then when the Mishnah continues, when the Mishnah continues, slaves who are not freed, apostle, that is according to the Mishnah Rishoyna. Originally, the civil position was the guy could stay like this indefinitely. Well, he's half Eved, he's not completely free. So therefore, he would be potter. So the Mishnah is going backwards in chronological order. First, it tells us how the final halacha is, and then the next line, the Vavavan of Shem Mishnah, is telling us how the original halacha was. And now she says, okay, Mishnah is also a claimer. We have a general rule that once the Mishnah is formulated a certain way, then they didn't change the wording, even though eventually the halacha was decided differently. The Rambam learns the other way around. And the Mefarshim on the Rambam have a field day explaining how exactly the Rambam makes that fit with our Gemara over here, you know, how the Rambam learns the phrasing in our Gemara. But basically, the Rambam holds the other way around. When we started off by saying Akol Chayavim Beriya means according to the first halacha, according to the Mishnah Rishayna, that the as a Chetzi Eved B'Chetzi Ben Chorin, he is obligated in Riyah. When did they say when the Mishnah continues about bottom shein and chafarim that unfree slaves, meaning ones that are not completely free, are potter? That was according to the Mishnah Achroina. Once we say now that he is going to have to be freed. Okay, he's going to have to be, but he isn't yet. And therefore we potter him from Riyah. Tosfos has, by the way, an interesting girsa. The other way, when Beit Shammai is arguing to Beit Hillel and saying "Tantem es rabbi ves atmele tekantem," that you made things work out very well for his master because he'll have to work out of his slave, but you haven't fixed him up because he can't marry. Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Meshulam that has the girsa the other way around. That actually you haven't fixed up things for his rebbe for his master either, because part of the advantage of having a slave is that you'll be able to have more baby slaves from him. If he can't marry, then you lose that benefit. The Gemara in Gittin discusses the main sugya about this whole thing is in Gittin, where the Mishnah talks about this, and the Gemara explains over there in the end that actually this halacha, I mean the Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel ended up conceding to Beit Shammai, so the halacha is like that. That's one of the rare cases where that happened. Nevertheless, the halacha about a chetzi eved chetzi ben chorin still exists in set. What about a female slave? A female chetzi eved chetzi shifra chetzi ben chorin, she doesn't have a mitzvah peruru. She doesn't really have lo l'toyer bra either. So therefore, yes, she could indefinitely stay half and half. Unless the Gemara talks about cases where there's a matter of kritos involved, where then whatever. Ordinarily, yeah.
What about the 7 year after 7 years?
That's an eved ivri.
And
every Kanani, lo b'hem tavodu. The pasuk says you keep them forever. As a matter of fact, the Gemara discusses there in Gittin that it's actually you're violating a mitzvah saseh if you free an Eved Kanani unnecessarily. A case like this is a necessary reason, because the Chachamim told you. A case over there, the Gemara brings the famous case over there, that Rabbi Eliezer one time came to Shul with his Eved Kanani. There were 9 people for a minyan. He made the slave free. He was mashach for him, so he could make a minyan. But those are ordinarily though it's yeah. Because that's the only way. Yeah.
One of the rabbis said, "Why you made a joke every time you say, come on, let's go get one of the security guards and let's burn so we can get a minion."
Yeah, doesn't really work that way. On Eved, you can be Meshacher against his will. Go, you can't. Go, you can't.
Could have been a lawyer and a basement in there.
Yeah. Mishnah said, the Mishnah said, chutz mechera shoyte v'kachin follow. That's except for the Mishnah had started listing the ones who are potter from Re'ia and the first three other famous tree out of cheresh shoyte v'kachin. The Gemara says, katani cheresh drumya de shoyte v'kachin. So we see that a cheresh is put in the same breath as the shoyte v'kachin, which implies that they're all on the same level. Ma shoyte v'kachin de lavinei de'ya, which implies just like a shoyte and a cotton do not have complete de'ya. Shoyte obviously not, and a cotton doesn't have fully developed das either. A famous thing the Rebbe Roshab talks about in Kuntres HaTfilah, a cotton does, what we mean when we say a cotton doesn't have das, he doesn't yet have empathy really. A normal adult should be able to put themselves in the other person's shoes and realize, you know, for example, a poor person realize what he's going through and have rahmanas on him. A kid may know intellectually that the person is poor, but he can't yet really feel it. That kind of das, a child gets at their bar bat mitzvah. So af cheresh delav bar deyahu. So then that would imply that the cheresh also is somebody who does not have complete intelligence. So in that case, what the Mishnah would be telling us is kiditznan. Like we learn in a Mishnah, that in Trumas, cheresh shedibur chachamim v'chomakim, every place throughout, in all places throughout Shach, where the chachamim talk about a cheresh, means she'ena shemeh ve'ena mitaber, means somebody who cannot hear and cannot speak, which, like we said before, means he was born deaf or became deaf at a very young age and never learned to speak. Which would imply, though, if he's able to speak, even though he can't hear, so he, for example, he became deaf later in life, or he can hear but he can't speak, then he would be chayev. Because that's not considered a cheresh for this purpose. And in that case, then, our Mishnah is teaching us by implication, what we learn explicitly in a Braisa. The Braisa says, Hamadaba ve'ena shemeh, somebody who can speak but cannot hear, zeru cheresh. That's the definition of a cheresh. Shemeh ve'ena, the definition for that purpose of a cheresh. In some cases, we have, even though we said b'chol makom, there are exceptions. There are exceptions. For example, we learned in Rosh Hashanah, for example, that a cheresh, that somebody who's deaf, even if he's able to speak, can't be most of the other people with blowing shofar because he can't be Yotzei himself. Megillah, same thing.
Not because
of a lack of das, but because he can't hear.
Right.
Yeah. We'll be talking about that more tomorrow as well, yeah. Shemeah ve'enim adabu zeru ilim. If somebody can hear but he can't speak, then that's what the halacha called a mute person. And the Braisa continues, both of those cases, the one who's deaf but not mute, or mute but not deaf, are considered like a pekeach, like a normal person, like a normal healthy person, for all purposes. As opposed to if they can't do both, and that would be what the Mishnah is saying, our Mishnah, when it implies that a cheresh does not have das, would have to be talking about where he's both, can't hear and can't speak. There is, by the way, a lot of discussion in the Achronim of the last few hundred years. What about you have? I mean, even one of the earliest sources that talks about it is the Trubus of the Tzemach Tzedek, not the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, but the earlier Tzemach Tzedek, Reb Mendel of Nicholsburg, 400 years ago. About he discusses. He has an interesting Trubah. They asked him about a tailor, I think, in their town who he was congenitally deaf, so he couldn't speak and he couldn't hear. But he was obviously, you know, he knew his work well and he could communicate, I guess, by gestures or whatever, very well. And the question was, do you say that he has a lack of das, as the Gemara is saying over here? And the Tzemach Tzedek says, nevertheless, yes. We don't make distinctions in that kind of thing. The Chachamim are saying that somebody who cannot hear and cannot speak has a lack of normal intelligence because they're not able to fully communicate with other people, and that's how you learn, is by communicating. So it doesn't matter even if he appears to be intelligent. And there are many other Achronim also who discuss according to that. On the other hand, there are opinions. The Rabbi Yaakov Emden, for example, says no. Somebody who's a deaf mute who's been able to be trained to speak in sign language or whatever can get an aliyah, for example. There's in more recent times also, once they developed fully fully, you know, real systems of sign language and, you know, all these different other kinds of things and hearing implants and whatnot, you have the question keeps on coming up, and then and different posts can take different views on it. Whether we still say that someone who can't hear and can't speak is considered to have a lack of das, or maybe we say that only l'chumra but not l'kula. Or maybe we don't say it at all. Maybe indeed, with the change in circumstances, maybe taka, the situation changed.
Unusual for them to grasp the full gamut of human intelligence.
Okay, you know, so what? I mean, a person who's a normal person who can hear and speak also is not necessarily gonna reach that full gamut. You know, I mean, you have a lot of stupid people out there who can hear and speak also, you know, unless they fit the definition of a shoter, which we'll talk about tomorrow and the next day, you know, and then, yeah.
And a lot of how people can get intelligence is by hearing that.
So tomorrow we'll have something about that. Tomorrow we'll have about it. The nephews of Rebbe, the nephews of Rebbe Yochanan ben Gudgoda, rather, whatever, who could hear but couldn't speak. We'll talk about that tomorrow. But yeah. Something else. We might have the Enishemaya Zeu Cheresh, Shemeya Veinim Adaba Zeu Ilim. How do we know that those definitions, where do we know those definitions from? Where do we know that the word Cheresh defines somebody who can hear but cannot speak, and the word Ilim defines somebody who can speak but cannot hear? Answer is, B'chdiv, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, V'ani k'cheresh la'yeshma, I am like a deaf person who doesn't hear. This is David talking about how all his enemies torment him and hassle him and everything, and he pretends like he doesn't hear and like he doesn't have anything to say to them. I'm like a deaf person, I don't hear. I'm like a mute person who doesn't open his mouth. So we see the definition of a cheresh is doesn't hear, and the definition of an ilam is he doesn't speak. Or another possibility, you can say that the word ilam means a mute person because you can say, like people say, what do the people have by folk etymology, kind of, that people say the word ilam stands for ishtakil milule. His speech has been taken away. So therefore, we see that the word Elaim means somebody who's unable to speak. Then the Mishnah had said, Medaber v'ena shemeya she'ena v'ena medaber chayev, that if somebody is able to hear but not speak, or speak but not hear, then he's chayev, in Aliyah L'Regel, and in general, he's chayev in most mitzvahs. The question is, Valtanya, where we learn another Braitha, no, Medaber v'ena shemeya she'ena v'ena medaber potter. Another Braitha says that in those cases, they'd be potter. So Ravina, or some say Rava, said Chasuri Mechsra. The Braisa, or maybe the Mishnah, is missing the Mishnah, I guess, is missing words. What it means to say is like this: Everybody is obligated in the two mitzvahs of Re'iyah and Simcha. As we said, Re'iyah, coming to the Beis Mikdash and bringing your Orlus Re'iyah, and Simcha, eating the Shalmei Chagiga. Everybody is obligated in those, except for a person who is either mute or deaf, who's either deaf or mute, but not both. Shapata min Re'iyah, he's potter from Re'iyah, as we're going to learn tomorrow. Why? Nevertheless, even though he's a bar das, in other words, even though ordinarily he would be chayav mitzvah, in this particular case, the Torah punishes him.
Because
we'll learn it tomorrow. However, but even though he is potter from Re'iyah, he's still chayav in simcha, because there's no exception in the Torah, and he's a bar das, he's chayav in most mitzvahs. However, then the mission is continuing. The Eschaena Shemeya Veloy Medaber, but a person who is both deaf and mute, the Shoita of a cotton, as well as a Shoita and a cotton, all the ones who don't have das, who don't have complete das at all, Potter Achna Simcha, and they are Potter also from the mitzvah of Simcha. Hoya, let's draw them from mitzvahs Amoris Patera, because in fact they're Potter from all mitzvahs.
So the threshold of Simcha is vision.
Yeah. Because Re'iyah, we're going to learn tomorrow and over the subsequent days that there's a lot of implications that the pasuk puts in the words over there that imply that there's various classes of people, all these various classes of people that we mentioned in the Mishnah that are pasuk. But yeah, so what we're saying is the Mishnah is implying that there are actually two kinds of cheresh, one kind of cheresh who is considered to have full das, he can't hear but he can speak, or vice versa. And then you have the other kind of cheresh, which is the classic cheresh that we talk about throughout most of Shas, who can't hear and can't speak.
Now, we always meant so far up to now that it's from birth.
So that's what I'm saying. Usually in Shas, when we usually when we have the triad of cheret shart v'katan, usually the cheret, that's what the Gemara started to say, that usually the cheret, by implication, the cheret is the one who can't hear and can't speak, and therefore, like the shaita and like the katan, lacks full das.
Now, if someone was born normal, grew up normal, he has a stroke, and he cannot hear or speak, what's the halacha?
So let me see. If it's one or the other, what we do is the Gemara talks about this in Bittin. Is what we do is we ask him to we ask him questions and see whether he gestures appropriately. The answers. I'm not sure actually if that applies also if he can't hear and if the speech prevents him from both hearing and speaking. I'm not sure about that. The main case it talks about over there in Gittin is where he can't speak, where therefore you ask him once you establish that he's able to gesture appropriately, that he knows that his brain is not affected, that his mind is not affected, then he's still considered to be fully normal for all purposes. He can order that a get should be written for his wife, is a classic example over there, and all kinds of other things. If he can't hear either, I don't know. I mean, if he can't hear either, then how is he going to respond to what you're doing? Then you get back into the question of whether sign language has the same effect, the halacha, I don't know.
Would it be accepted, sign language?
That's part of the issue, is when we're saying, according to the opinion, that nowadays a deaf mute who's able to speak in sign language is considered a bar das, then yes, they're considered a bar das because they're able to communicate and be communicated with through sign language. But I'm saying not everybody accepts that. Not everybody accepts that principle. It's quite controversial in halacha.
Now what they do is, so people cannot see, cannot hear, cannot speak, they give them computers.
But that's effective for our purposes. That's the same as sign language. Either way, it's a non-verbal method of communication. Yeah.
Now that's with a lot of the boxes and extreme ones.
Yeah. We learn similarly in a Braisa, like the way we amended the Mishnah. Everybody is obligated in Re'iyah and in Simcha, except for a person who is deaf, who can speak but can't hear, or who can hear, or who is mute, who can hear but can't speak. Those people are apart from Re'iyah, as we'll learn tomorrow, the reason why. And even though those people are potter from Re'iyah and from bringing the Olos Re'iyah, Chayiv v'Simcha, then they're still Chayiv in the mitzvah of Simcha, of the Samachta v'Chagecha, and eating the meat, etc. The Esh Enish Shemeir v'Lemidava, but somebody who cannot hear and cannot speak, Shoyt v'Katan, P'turin Afmin HaSimcha, then they're also potter from Simcha, Horil P'turin v'Kom Mitzvah Samur Svatara, because they're potter from all other mitzvahs, and therefore necessarily they're potter from this as well. Just to tie up a couple of loose ends, by the way, I was mentioning on the Mishnah that Tosfos argues with Rashi on what the definition of Re'iyah is. When we're saying Akol Chayavim Re'iyah, do we mean primarily the mitzvah of appearing in the Azara or the mitzvah of bringing carbon? One part of the discussion is if we're talking about a cotton, we said that once a cotton is old enough to ride on his father's shoulders or to walk, according to Bishama and Basil respectively, then he's Chayav. If it's a matter of bringing a carbon, how can you say that a kid is chayiv in a carbon? And the answer would be, actually, put it this way, the question is not so much how can you say that a child is chayiv in a carbon, the issue is more, if minat Torah he does not have to, then how is he able to bring it midrabbanan? The rabbanan can't tell you to bring chulun la'azara, they can't tell you to bring a non-hektish animal into the azara, it's also to do that. And the answer is actually that what you'd have to do is he would have to designate it not as an obligatory carbon, but rather as a nedava, which you can bring an ola or a shlom. The father can bring it on his son's behalf. The child doesn't have animals of his own, the pastor. But the father can bring on his son's behalf an ola or a shlom as a voluntary thing, because you can do that. And the other thing, the other detail of it is that in that case, then, the child wouldn't do smicha on it. Ordinarily, as we'll learn in the second parak, you do smicha on a korban before you bring it. Here, since it's not his obligation to bring, then he wouldn't do smicha on it. Well, the father would do smicha, I'm not sure.
The
pashtus of bar mitzvah, yeah. And we'll have in the second parak also a machlokas for the women of chayiv and smicha. We've touched on it before. Yeah.
Good to have you back.
Thank you. We said one other interesting thing, by the way, an interesting little thing from Tosfos. We mentioned the definition of cheresh and ilim respectively, that a cheresh is somebody who can't hear and an ilim is somebody who can't speak. The Tosfos points out the pasuk the Eibushter tells when Moshe argues to Hashem, I can't go take the Jews out of Mitzrayim, I have kvad peh or kvad loshen, I have a speech defect. The Eibushter tells him, mi som pela adam, who gave a person a mouth, or mi yasum ilam et cheresh, or who made a person mute or deaf. So we see the Medrash says, Tosfos quotes, that both the word ilam and the word cheresh have to do with the mouth. So therefore, the word ilam means somebody who can't speak, and the word cheresh means not only somebody who can't hear, as we said from Tillim, but also who can't speak.
But the
point is, because we're darshaning the fact that Hashem says, the fact that Hashem juxtaposes the cheresh with the peh, implying that there's a component of being a cheresh. Yeah.